The Cambridge Marketing Podcast with Kiran Kapoor. Brought to you by Cambridge Marketing College. See their range of courses and apprenticeships at marketingcollege.com.
Welcome. Today we're discussing the future of retail, and my guest is Carl Meyer, who is Product Marketing Manager at Jayant and has 25 years experience working in the internet and digital marketing industries. And he's also a fellow of the Cambridge Marketing College. Carl, welcome. Can we start with what is retail?
Hi, Kieran. Yes, absolutely. For me, I think in this context, we're talking about retail being very much a business to consumer and really looking at goods rather than services. So, clothing, fast moving consumer goods rather than services like mobile phone contracts and things like that. So very much the things you can touch and feel.
Okay, and it's fair to say that retail has been going through quite a long period of flux, but obviously the pandemic's really pushed it. So can we just talk through some of the changes that have already happened within retail?
Yes, absolutely. I think, in all honesty, the last 18 months through COVID and so forth have really accelerated the changes which are already happening. I don't think there's anything majorly new in what's happened over the last 18 months. I think it's just going a lot faster than people were expecting. And certainly, I think the rise of Amazon and organizations like that have really changed the way that a lot of people consider some of their day-to-day shopping to be. And this has particularly been the rise in online food retail, be that supermarkets or even things like Deliveroo and Just Eat and so forth. We're looking at a kind of a polarization of the retail market into two areas, one of which is the kind of basic stuff, the stuff that we just have and need, milk and pizza and so forth, and the other stuff, the stuff that we want. And I think those are the really kind of interesting polarization and separation of the marketplace there.
Okay, and you've talked in the past about the difference between functional and experiential within retail. So can we explore that?
Yes, absolutely. It's it's a phrase I've used a lot over the last few years with my students, and it's interesting that over the last few months I've actually started hearing it from other experts on the radio and talking about it on various other radio programs. For me, this is really the differentiation between the two different modes. For this, if you look at functional being, your normal weekly food shop, so that's your milk, your bread, your potatoes, your cat litter, all of those kind of things that you have to buy. Yes, absolutely. Every week, and it's the same stuff, and you don't really kind of need to change. You don't need to look at it and feel it and touch it and stuff like that to know that that's what you need. The other stuff is very much more the experiential stuff, which is, imagine you're buying a present for somebody, a gift for somebody for their birthday or for their wedding anniversary or something along those lines. You don't really know what you want to get them, but you know that you want to get them something which is nice, which is personalised to them, which is special to them and so forth, which you're going to actually go, this is great, thank you very much. That really takes that kind of experiential kind of input into what you're looking at. You really do need to look at it, feel it, wander around shops, browse around shops to find exactly the right thing. And this is really the kind of shopping that online really can't marry up to, I can't match up to at the moment, simply because of the way that we can't experience everything through a screen, be that a laptop screen or a phone screen or whatever. You just can't do it, and that I think is where retail, high street retail, physical retail is going to have to look at utilizing its uniquenesses there to make sure that people are still consider it to be relevant.
Yes, I think we've all experienced firms rushing to the experiential through COVID. So I can think of a lot of makeup firms that are now, you can put up your own photo and you can try the makeup on you on screen, but it's still not quite the same as having somebody else put it on you saying, oh, you need to do this, you need to do that. So you lose part of that experience.
Absolutely. And I think, my wife has the same circumstances. You go into a Boots makeup counter or a department store makeup counter, and you build a relationship with the person over a period of time. They know your skin type, they know what you want, how you want to look and experience it, and that can't be replicated through no matter how much virtual reality, augmented reality, all those kind of things. It really doesn't quite work. And on our high streets, we're seeing that shops which can provide those experiential type services are still there and still benefiting, whereas the more basic stuff is going away. And I mean, if you look at things like Waterstones, Waterstones is a bookshop, and you think, well, how can a bookshop survive in the era of Amazon? But Waterstones is surviving and thriving, and I think it's because it has identified that experiential nature of its kind of book shopping. So if you know the book, you know the title, you know the author, you know the ISBN, you've listened to Book of the Week on a radio station or a TV station and gone, yeah, that's the book I want, you go to Amazon, two or three clicks, you can buy the book. The difficulty that you have is if you're going away for a couple of weeks for a holiday and you want a few books for the flight or for by the pool or whatever, you don't really know what you want. You've really got no idea of what you fancy, what you feel like. The ability to go into a Waterstones and look at their tables of books and flick through some books and pick some up, put them down, and so on, is very hard for Amazon to replicate. And that is where they are really benefiting. And those tables at the front of Waterstones are a prime example of how experiential shopping is so very different to an Amazon, which is a functional shopping activity.
Yes, one of the things that always intrigued me in the again during COVID was the number of people that wanted to save their local bookshop. So bookshop.org, an online bookshop which supported local physical bookshops, was born, and is definitely worth exploring if you want to keep your local bookshop experience. But it was interesting that people clearly valued that physical bookshop experience that they wanted to be able to support.
Absolutely. And I mean, whenever I've gone into Waterstones to buy books, and I tragically have way too many books, I think all of us do in Cambridge, it's just a thing. When you go there and you speak to somebody at the till with your purchases, they go, oh, that's brilliant, I read that, that's fantastic. If you like that one, then you might also like these guys, because I really enjoyed. And, obviously it's a kind of a salesy activity that they're doing, but it's that kind of experience, it's that conversation about books, it's that whole feeling around it, and you feel better, and it's a much nicer experience than just getting another cardboard box in through your letterbox, and you don't get that kind of excitement, which I still get from buying books. And it's the same with clothing and so forth. I mean, over the COVID times, I've essentially been wearing pretty much t-shirts, and that's about it, because I've been not in the office. And you can buy a pack of t-shirts online, and it's fine. They've got two armholes, they've got a neck hole, and they're not going to fall apart in 3 minutes. That's all you need. Going back into the office, which hopefully I'll be doing in the next few weeks, you want something a little bit smarter, you want something a bit nicer. That's where I think people will be going back into shops and will be buying things. And that's why I think Gap closing the high streets is possibly a bit short-sighted, John Lewis as well, I think maybe they are possibly a little bit short-sighted in what they're doing, closing some of their department stores.
Now that is an interesting one, because John Lewis, of course, have declared that they are going to sell some of their estate or turn some of their estate into housing, because they've now announced that city centres need housing more than they need department stores. I agree with you. I think that is quite an interesting view, because I think people that live in housing in city centres still need stores.
They do. And I think that the interesting thing that John Lewis, when they said this, 25% of our retail is now online, so we don't need the physical stores. And I think just because we've been able to buy online over the last 18 months doesn't mean that we necessarily want to buy online. And if you look at a lot of the stuff that a store like John Lewis has, electronics and, you know, TVs and clothes and homewares and so forth, those kind of items are things that you do want to pick up and you do want to feel and you do want to experience before you make that final decision. I mean, as an example, I bought a laptop just around the beginning of lockdown, a new one for my home, and I bought it online because you couldn't buy it in stores. The keyboard is canted very slightly over to the left, which means that when I'm typing, my touch typing skills have disappeared completely, and it's just coming up as garbage. If I'd been able to go into a store and actually, you know, touch it, feel it, play with the keys, and it sounds a very kind of childish thing to do, I'd have noticed that and have changed. I would have bought a different one, perhaps. So, you know, some interesting things there. Just because we can buy online doesn't mean that we always want to buy online.
So I suppose the interesting question, if you are running a large department store like John Lewis, do you view the stores as somewhere that people traditionally go and shop? Or do you say, actually, people aren't going to be prepared to do that, so we reduce the size of the stores and then we just have one of everything and then you can order it online? How do you think the marketplace might go?
The concept of sort of having one of everything on in the store and sort of, oh, it's not on the shelf, we'll order it for you, I think takes away some of the spontaneity. You know, when we do on e-commerce online, you know, the back button is the easiest button to press. And if there's any friction in the transaction, we talk a lot about reducing the friction of online transactions. Building in that friction into the physical store, I think, is going to be a bad idea because, oh, no, we haven't got it in a size 12. But if you order it, we'll have it here in 48 hours. Oh, forget it. I'll go somewhere else. You know, I don't want it that badly. I'll just find something else I want. And I think that putting friction into the physical retail environment is going to be a negative thing because we've spent so much time reducing friction on the online environment that you're going to be, you know, cutting off your nose there. We still want that. I mean, if you look in some places where you have like Tesla stores, where you have a Tesla showroom inside the Grand Arcade in Cambridge, you know, slightly different because you generally have to sit in one car and then they go in and order it for you and it turns up on your driveway. But that's great and you expect that, but I think if you're buying a pair of trousers or you're buying a pair of shoes, you know, a shoe shop saying, oh no, sorry, I haven't got a size 10, but I can get you a size 10 in 48 hours, it's not going to cut it, I think.
Okay, so one of the things we've talked about is experiential shopping, and often that's actually used as making shopping centres or department stores as destination places. So can we sort of look at some of the ways that shopping centres are doing that? Because I think that, again, is one of the big changes with a shopping centre, or it's one of the big growth areas of shopping centres, was to try and make themselves destination places.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, the rise of the coffee shop and all the kind of food outlets and so forth really show that people are wanting to go into a shopping centre and actually spend some time, not just, you know, dash in, grab the thing off the shelf and dash out again. And, you know, the increase in the number of tables for people to sit at, the number of people, you know, getting takeaway drinks or sitting in restaurants and cafes, just meeting up with friends, just chatting, and then maybe wandering off with friends to go shopping. I mean, my daughter does it all of the time. You know, she'll happily spend hours and hours and hours in town doing that. Of course, she has the advantage that she doesn't have to pay for car parking. And this is the really interesting issue here, that if you want your shopping centres to have lots of footfall, lots of people wandering past, you know, grabbing a coffee, grabbing a cake, meeting up with friends, doing a little bit of browsing, doing a little bit of shopping, then punishing them for spending hours in the shopping centre is probably not the best way to go. And as a long-term strategy, it's probably not a brilliant idea.
Yes, I think shopping centres are concentrated on making car parking easy, but not necessarily thought about how you make car parking cheap or reducing the price, perhaps. If you spend longer and therefore you're likely to spend more, maybe you spend less on the car parking.
Oh, well, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, alternatively, you could look at it, I mean, in the Cambridge Leisure Park, for example, in which is, you know, way out of the main centre near the railway station in Cambridge, if you go for a meal or you go for a cinema, you get money off of your car parking. And maybe there could be some kind of environment like that, that if you spend, you know, £10 in certain shops, then you get a couple of pounds off your car parking. And that might be a way of rebalancing that to you know, get people in, but, you know, make sure they're actually spending money in there. If you're spending £25 on parking for the entire day, that's essentially £25 you haven't got to spend in the shops. So, yes. You know, you have to balance that out. You know, it's all very well taking £25 off of their debit card for their car parking, but they're not spending that in John Lewis or in the coffee shop or in any of the clothing shops in the centre because they haven't got it anymore, you know.
Yeah. So I suppose pricing is actually one of the things we haven't talked about. So one of the big calls about the move to online shopping is that it's going to be cheaper for the consumer. And you can see that with Amazon. And the Waterstones bookshop experience undoubtedly is more expensive because you don't get the Amazon discounts and you are paying for the experience. So how is that going to work long term?
Yes. I mean, it's interesting because I don't think necessarily there is always a massive difference in pricing between Amazon and the high street. I think people perceive there to be a bigger difference than there actually is in many cases. It may only be a pound or two or whatever. And places like Waterstones get around this by, you know, buy one, get one half price and so forth to cross and upsell what they're doing. And that can be an interesting way forward. But equally, the experiential nature means that you probably have to accept a little bit of a premium in there. If you want, you know, a textbook, or if you want a, you know, Da Vinci Code kind of blockbuster thing, then yeah, absolutely, you're going to get it cheaper on Amazon. But that's not always what we want, and I think, you know, there will be always a market for that, not necessarily high-end premium cost, but a place where you're getting value. And for me, and hopefully for a lot of other people, you see the value in terms of the ability to browse, the ability to speak to experts who understand, who know, you know, be that on the makeup counter, or be that on the till at Waterstones, or be that in John Lewis talking to an expert about the TVs and stuff like this. Those are value adds that the physical retail can offer, and, you know, you balance the value add with the price discounts and so forth, you know. So maybe it's a case of adding value rather than to justify the difference in price, rather than trying always to compete on the lowest possible price.
Yes, that would it fit quite nicely with a sort of standard strategy triangle, where you could be the lowest cost or you can be the higher value. And talking about a value in things, one of the areas we haven't talked about is online food shopping. And of course, Amazon going into online food shopping was supposed to be one of the biggest changes that was going to break open the marketplace. I'm not certain that has necessarily yet quite broken the marketplace, but where does online food shopping fit in all of this?
I mean, certainly I think online food shopping is growing, and over the last 18 months has grown massively, and we've all probably experienced the growth pains of some of those in terms of unable to get slots or shortages and so on and so forth. I think it's very interesting that you can actually see this being mirrored by the way that many of the food stores are now working. You're seeing a growth in the kind of the metro smaller supermarkets on the high street, you know, the growth of co-ops, which every single corner seems to have a co-op on it now. And it may be that we're seeing that as a reaction here, that people are spending, you know, £50-100 a week on their core basics, you know, the potatoes, the onions, the milk, the cheese, the butter, and all those kind of things, and getting that delivered online. And then they're going into those local stores, the co-ops and so forth, to pick up something special for the weekend, so, you know, a few snacks, or, oh, I don't fancy cooking tonight, I'll see if I can get a pizza in wherever. So maybe we're seeing a kind of a little bit of a mix there, that you're getting the, you know, the boring stuff, the functional stuff through online, and then you're getting the, oh, I fancy a treat tonight, or I fancy an Indian night, or whatever it happens to be, And that's the experiential stuff, you know, oh, I need a few beers and, oh, I can pick up that and all those kind of bits and pieces. So there could actually be a polarisation even in the food retail environment like that.
Yes, and again, of course, one forgets that you have functional and you have experiential food.
Yeah, indeed, absolutely. And you see the growth of these you know, co-ops and Tesco Metros and all these kind of things. And I think they're probably reacting to that, that people are... And when people start going back into their offices, I think those will start to grow again when you're, you know, ringing up home and going, oh, we haven't got anything in, oh, that's all right, I'll stop off around and pick up something for tonight, kind of activities going on. And of course, in terms of the other aspect of food retail, which is happening, is things like Mindful Chef and Gusto and all of these other packaged meal type things which are coming out. Which I don't know if you've experienced any of those, Kieran, over the last 18 months. Have you tried any of those?
I haven't personally. It sounds like you might have done, though.
Yes, yeah, we tried the Mindful Chef ones, and they're really quite interesting. What we found is that in this experiential environment, they actually, we cooked together. You know, I didn't have to commute home, so we could, you know, get together and we could actually do the cooking between the two of us. And it was actually a really kind of nice social type activity for the two of us to do the cooking using these packs and getting ideas and freshening up and livening up the usual kind of 8 or 9 core meals that the average person cycles through. And I think it's something like 8 or 9 meal types that we all cycle through over, and this gave us the ability to just try a few new things, try a few different things, and they were actually, yeah, compared to a takeaway or compared to a meal out, they were not bad pricing actually, so quite interesting to have a look at those things. And yes, you see a lot of the TV advert for them at the moment, so yeah.
Yeah, that's probably a very good point to finish on, to say that, yes, although we've been talking about the future of physical retail and saying how important the experiential side is in physical retail, there are some things that online and delivery can give you, which you perhaps experientially might not get.
Oh, totally, totally. And I think that we're going to be living in an environment where we have both online and physical for a very long time, and each of them will be focusing on their strengths, and I think that one of the things that we need to do is to make sure that we don't have the physical just trying to ape the online and try and copy it in a kind of a me too kind of environment in there. I think it needs to identify its own personal strengths and weaknesses and really work on its strengths and you know, develop itself as a different thing rather than you know, considering them as competing. They complement each other in many senses.
Karl Meyer, that was a very interesting discussion about the difference between online and physical, and a very important marketing point to finish there, that we need to look for strengths and rather than just try to sort of be a me too or a faint copy. Karl Meyer, thank you very much indeed.
No problem. Pleasure.
The Cambridge Marketing Podcast from Cambridge Marketing College, training marketing and PR professionals across the globe.